from the Game Nashville studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into the show this Wednesday evening. Ryan Porth here in the Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet Game Studios, joined by Jeremy K. Gover of thegamenashville.com and the Predators Radio Network. Gover, Porth, thanks for coming to the studios this evening.
I appreciate you asking me, sir.
I know you will also be here for Slapshot Radio, which follows this program.
It does.
So you've got 2 hours.
I do.
Of Preds talk.
An overdose of knowledge tonight.
Okay. Well, that's what the K stands for in your middle name.
According to Stu Grimson, that's what it stands for. Don't laugh, Buck. And Buck is laughing, the producer. Stu Grimson coined that for me a couple years ago. And when Stu Grimson gives you a nickname,
it sticks.
You just leave it alone.
Jeremy K. Gover. The K is for knowledge.
Correct.
So last night, the Nashville Predators took on the San Jose Sharks, and they fell 5-4. I was about to say in overtime. It was not in overtime. I think a lot of Preds fans wish they had gotten a point out of that game, but it was 5-4, and here was Peter Laviolette after the game assessing how his team played.
Lousy first, good second, back and forth in the third. They ended up, we made some mistakes there at the end there that cost us. We had plenty of looks and chances to make it 5-3 or even go back to tie it again, and it didn't bounce for us.
That was Preds head coach Peter Laviolette after last night's regulation loss 5-4 to the San Jose Sharks. Gover, that was a roller coaster of a game. The first period, like he said, in his words, lousy. It was bad. They were outshot 18-5. They were outscored 3-0. That was their worst period of this season so far. Would you agree?
I would agree.
And then the second period was one of their best. They outscored the Sharks 3-0. They outshot them 15-6. And the goal by Craig Smith, as fluky as it may have been, redirecting off his skate from a Ryan Johansson pass, then Philip Forsberg scores twice to tie it up. All of a sudden, it was a completely different ball game going into the third period.
It's almost like the first, they wouldn't know this at the point we're talking about, but it's almost like the first period cost them the game already. It was just
But they bounced back.
No, sure. But I'm saying that they put themselves in such a hole that instead of being up 3-1 or 3-0 or even 3-2 at that point, all they did was manage to tie the game going into the second period.
That's
second
fair.
Intermission, excuse me.
And then early in the third period, Rocco Grimaldi scoring his first goal as a Nashville Predator.
A nice
you
one.
Would have thought it was Philip Forsberg out there.
It was a nice goal.
It was very nice.
Yep. Good move, good finish.
And then the last 7 minutes of the game, two breakdowns, 13 seconds apart, put the Sharks back up 5-4. And I'm not as, let's just say, irritated by the game-winning goal by Joe Thornton, because that goal, Justin Braun is deep in his own zone. He flips it all the way down ice. Sorensen quickly gets it over to Thornton, who's breaking in free. Kyle Turris couldn't keep up with Joe Thornton there. But that's a great play by the Sharks. You have to tip their cap. It was like an ice-long tic-tac-toe goal. Braun to Sorensen to Thornton. It wasn't a quick tic-tac-toe, but it basically was long distance. The game-tying goal that Joe Pavelski scored, Yannick Weber was aggressive on that play. He pinched up to the blue line to try to hit, I think it was Joe Thornton, whoever it was, at the blue line, and that caused Sorensen and Pavelski to have a two-on-one, and Pavelski scores.
When you're a defenseman and you're deciding that you're going to pinch in at the blue line on the attack, you've got to be absolutely sure, or at the very least playing the odds, that you can either get to the puck or that you are the player with the best opportunity to pressure the situation in the zone while somebody comes and covers your back, right? They take the spot for you. If you're going to come pinch in and it's a 50-50 puck, 60-40, something like that, you got it. Somebody has to be in your peripheral vision going and taking your back. And what happened was Weber pinched in too far and it bit him.
You can't do that up one on the road.
Correct. Especially in that situation, you've battled back so far right? You had a lousy first period. You made up for it in the second period. You can't start taking chances. Yeah. I mean, you can't do that.
That Shark Tank is a black hole for this Preds team. I was looking at the numbers earlier. They are 13-30-1 overall.
Does that include the 16 playoffs? Because you can throw that in there, too, if it doesn't.
It includes the three postseasons there.
Oh, okay.
So
all
0-7.
Okay.
They are 0-7 all time
right.
in the playoffs at San Jose. And the 13-30-1 includes the playoff record.
Yeah.
I mean, that place, it almost doesn't matter if they play well or they don't play well. It doesn't feel like they ever win out there. I know they have in the past.
Sure.
They did a couple seasons ago, but it just feels like they never win there.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if you're a team, you seem to do well against certain teams, right? And you can't really explain it, okay? But then you also have pits of misery, right, to where you go.
Dilly-dilly,
where you're going to go into San Jose, happens to be one of them, and they just can't seem to do anything right. Even when they put together one of their best periods of the season, well, you got to play all 60. I mean, you know, you can't, it's really tough. And they'll get over it eventually, right? I mean, it ebbs and flows, but it's just, man, it's tough to go into San Jose and almost expect to lose at that point, or find a way to lose or struggle at that point.
The Shark Tank is a black hole for a lot of teams, just like Smashville is a black hole
sure.
for a lot of teams, including the Sharks. I mean, the Sharks, before they came back in October in a similar fashion with quick goals in the third period to win that game 5-4 as well, back on October 23rd, I mean, San Jose hadn't had a lot of success here in Nashville either. So it goes both ways.
It does go both ways for sure.
So the power play. Last night, your reaction got me. Last night, 0 for 3 in San Jose. Monday night in Anaheim, it was 0 for 7. And in the last seven games, it is 2 for 28. Is this cause for concern? That these issues are lingering in for the first quarter of the season, that we're 18 games in to this Preds season and the problems are still persisting? Or do you still preach patience?
Well, I think patience in the sense that it's an 82-game season, right? But, you know, also it's patience in that sense, but at the same time, there's got to be, because this team is too good. I was trying to find an eloquent way to say that. This team is too good. The roster is too stacked to struggle this mightily when they're up a man. Like you have five skaters versus four of which, by the way, are not usually attacking. Like, they have to defend their zone. So I'm oversimplifying it, of course, but, you know, because it's NHL.
I wish the listening audience could have seen your face when you said, up a man.
It defies explanation that they are this poor.
It really
poor.
Does. I mean, they're one of the top teams when you look at goal differential. They're the top team in goal differential
right.
in the league, and they cannot score on the power play to save their life.
They're 30th of 31, right? I believe that's correct.
No, they are 31 of 31.
Okay. Then
there are 31 teams in the National Hockey League, and they are 31st.
It's not good.
I think they would have been 31st even if there were 30 teams still in the league. That's how atrocious the power play has been. They're 2 for 28 in the last seven games. One of those two was with the extra attacker on the ice in Dallas. So that was a 6-on-4 power play goal.
So Coach Laviolette has said over and over again when we've asked him about the power play that, well, you know, I start to get concerned when we're not getting good looks, or we're not getting good zone entries, or we're not getting sustained pressure, but we're getting all those things, so time will tell. That's getting a little tired
there,
because it's just like, okay, like, you know, again, you have Forsberg, you got Johansson, you got Arvidsson in theory, you got Subban in theory, you got Yossi, Ryan Ellis's shot, Turris, Fiala. I mean, these are guys that should be scoring on the power play at least at an average pace throughout the league.
It's just too predictable. The power play is too predictable because whenever we're watching, all we expect to see next is what one-timer are they going to try to tee up from the point or from the high slot with Roman Yossi or P.K. Subban or Ryan Ellis. I mean, I was reading a stat the other day that said like 40% of their shot attempts on the power play are from the defense.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Actually, it seems low, actually.
And that when you take into account the top five power plays in the league, the percentage of attempts from the blue line is like 20 or below.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's just a coincidence or if there's anything to that, but I think teams know how to stop this Predators power play, which is shadow the defenseman in Philip Forsberg. You know Ryan Johansson isn't going to shoot as much as he should. So, you know, if you stop the defenseman and Forsberg, then you're going to stop this power play.
Here's what I will say about that. I see what they're trying to do. Because if you do have bombs away mentality from the point, right? The theory is, I don't know, let's just call it half. Two of the four bombs away shots you're taking from the point are going to get through in some way, some form or other. It may get blocked in front. It may be saved by the goaltender. It may bounce off somebody and go to the corner. But it's going to get through. That's when the guy in front of the net really starts to matter. Take the goalie's eyes away. He can cause chaos in front, cause some movement, whether it be left or right or whatever the case is. Take a defenseman away. Be a dummy in the sense that if the puck goes through, act like you're going to go to one way when it's really going the other way. I mean, those are things you can do. So if you keep doing that, eventually the law of averages suggests that it'll work sometimes. Mm-hmm. The problem is you're right. It is too predictable because it's every time. There's almost no kind of creative outlet to get the power play going, and I think that's the concern.
And for the shots from the point, you don't have the Victor Arvidsson jump screen right now because he's on injured reserve.
Right, but you do have Colton Sissons, who's, again, a formidable person in front of the net. Now, is he a beast to be reckoned with in front of the net? I mean, you know.
No.
But he feels a need, but it's just not, he's just not an expert at it.
So last night was the first time all year that they have lost back-to-back games. The sky is falling, Gover.
If you look at Pred's Twitter, it is.
They're 13-4-1 with one game left on the road trip tomorrow night against the Arizona Coyotes. Pregame at 7, puck drop at 8. You will be.
I will be.
At the arena that it used to be jobbing.com arena. I don't even know what it is now.
It's the Gila River?
Oh, the Gila River. That's right.
Is it even pronounced Gila?
Oh, yeah.
It's not Gila?
No. Gila. I think Nick Hale with Morning Drive would pronounce it Gila.
It's not Cozumel.
It's not Cozumel.
Right. Love you, Nick.
Love you, Nick. Morning Drive, weekdays 6 to 10, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Where you can hear Cozumel mispronounced.
Not anymore, because that promotion's over.
I know.
Coming up next, though, speaking of Victor Arvidsson, how is the Arvidsson loss affecting the lineup right now for the Preds, and who exits the lineup when Austin Watson returns from his 18-game suspension? That's all coming up next. I'm Ryan Porth. He's Jeremy K. Gover. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, and streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Hey, this is Ryan Johansson. You're listening to Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth joined by Jeremy K. Gover in studio this evening. Jeremy will stay over with Slapshot Radio, Paul McCann and Company, at 7 o'clock right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and then Penalty Box Radio at 8 for the Wednesday Preds night. We need to come up with a name for Wednesday nights on 102.5 The Game with Preds Insider, Slapshot Radio / Smashville Live, and Penalty Box Radio.
It's a three-hour block.
It's a Golden Wednesday.
There you go.
Right.
Working title.
Okay. So Victor Arvidsson was put back on injured reserve on Monday before their game against the Anaheim Ducks, and Arvidsson left Saturday's game in Dallas with an upper body injury after crashing into the boards late in that game, and we don't know how long he's going to be out for. I was very worried after watching the replay of that play where he did crash into the boards that it may not be as quick of a return as his previous stint on injured reserve, but I honestly have no idea. But his loss is being the absence is being affected right now on this Nashville lineup because Philip Forsberg and Ryan Johansson simply are not the same players without Victor Arvidsson. They're still very good players, but that trio of Arvidsson, Forsberg, and Johansson is one of the best in the league. And you take any one of those three parts off at any time. We saw this, too, last year when Forsberg was out for a month, that Johansson and Arvidsson weren't quite the same. It kind of has the same feel. I know Forsberg scored twice last night. It was good to see him get back on the board after not scoring since his hat trick on October 27th.
He factored into all three of those goals in the second period.
He did. He got an assist on Craig Smith's goal. It was good to see him score a couple goals, but that line just doesn't have the same oomph when they're out there on the ice.
I agree. I talked to Philip Forsberg a few weeks ago. We almost played it on the show. We just ran out of time last time we were here together. And Forsberg basically said, Arvidsson's shoot first, Johansson's pass first. I try to do a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you take that chemistry, that dynamic off the line of Arvidsson being the shoot first guy, and now either Forsberg has to be shoot first, or right now Colton Sisson's right acting as the wing. So Colton Sisson's a shoot first, but he's not a shoot. You don't think of Colton Sisson as a shoot first guy. You think of him as a well-rounded jack of all trades. So I think it's almost like a threat is gone. Like, yes, the chemistry is disrupted because Arvidsson's not there, obviously. Any team would be disrupted when a 30-goal scorer is off the lineup. But I think more than that, it's the dynamic of the line and their roles that they play is totally thrown off. Because, yes, Johansson's pass-first guy, he always will. He's playmaker at their best. But now Forsberg has to do a little bit more, do something else. And then do they trust the other wing that comes on there? So it's really tough to not only absorb Arvidsson's loss, but fill that void as well.
And the opposition can focus on Forsberg and Johansson.
Or take the pass
more
away from Johansson, right.
Right. They can focus on those two more because they know whether it's Colton Sissons or Ryan Hartman or Kevin Fiala or Callie Yarncroke, if he's healthy, no matter who is up there on that line, they're not quite as effective as Victor Arvidsson. So they can shadow them more and keep those opportunities to a minimum more.
Kind of like a top receiver in the NFL, right? So if you have if you double team one guy, you know, AJ Green or I don't know, whatever, right? The other guy's going to be open inevitably or he's going to be on one-on-one coverage, man-on-man coverage. Well, if you lose AJ Green, I mean, you know, your offense is totally, it takes a huge hit, right?
Right.
Well, yeah, the Preds have offensive power on paper that can make up for Arvidsson, but it's a collective. It's not one guy that just fits right in and, okay, now everything's seamless. It's totally different.
Yeah, and it's good to see the second line start to get the wheels turning with Fiala, Turris, and Smith. I was happy to see Peter Laviolette put Fiala back up there on that line with Turris and Smith.
So was I.
And they've looked pretty good in the last few games. I mean, Kyle Turris had a couple great primary assists in Dallas, in Anaheim, and that trio right now has been really good. They need more of that as long as Victor Arvidsson is out of the lineup. Because if you're not going to get the same level of production out of that top line that you got for the first month of the season, you need more individuals to pick up the slack. And the second line is doing some of that. I do think the rash of injuries when you have Arvidsson out and then Callie Yarncroke has missed the last couple games. And, you know, these injuries are starting to pile up. If they can get some of these guys back in the lineup with or without Arvidsson, then I think the chances are greater that the secondary scoring can help Johansson and Forsberg.
Yeah, Turris has 6 points in his last 7 games, which, of course, is great to see because what was all the criticism before in the first couple weeks of the season, Ryan? It was secondary scoring is not pitching in. And
well, they weren't.
Right. Yeah. I'm right. So it's great to see them, like you mentioned. But to see Turris, in particular, have 6 points in his last 7 games, that's really great to see. Plus, I got to be honest, too. I mean, I liked Fiala and Hartman's chemistry. They were starting to develop a little bit, too. Fiala was assisting on Hartman's goals, and they seemed to work really well together. I wouldn't necessarily, when I look at it on paper, I wouldn't necessarily be like, oh, Hartman and Fiala, that's a good combination. But, you know, they showed, right, that they can play well together.
I wouldn't mind seeing Ryan Hartman on that top line.
As an audition for a band, as a Band-Aid?
Yeah.
Sure.
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
He's playing really well right now.
He's playing well. He's in a contract prove-it year, and he seems to be healthy. So, sure. I mean, while you're shuffling the deck and trying to find what fits and what can... I mean, you know, Hartman's a relentless player. So
he's got a little bit of Arvidsson in him.
A little bit, yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like that idea. Maybe they'll do that at some point.
Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5, the game streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy Keg over this evening in the Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet Game Studios. Earlier today, a statement was released from the NHLPA regarding Austin Watson. As you know, Austin Watson has been suspended for the first 18 games of this season. Austin Watson can return to the lineup tomorrow night in Arizona when the Preds take on the Coyotes because tomorrow is game 19 of the season. And the NHLPA statement reads, on behalf of Austin Watson. Says, quote, I would like to thank my family, friends, and the Nashville Predators for their continued support during this difficult time. It is a privilege to play in the National Hockey League, and I am grateful to be able to once again compete with my teammates. I apologize to Jennifer, my family, Jennifer's family, my teammates, the Nashville community, and the Nashville Predators for the negative attention that has come from the events on June 16th. Out of respect for my family's health, well-being, and privacy, I will have no further comment on this matter moving forward. Shortly thereafter, end quote. Shortly thereafter, the Nashville Predators released a statement saying, quote, the Nashville Predators continue to support Austin, Jennifer, and their baby as they take the necessary steps to move forward as a family. Austin has served his suspension and has been reinstated to the team's active roster. Out of respect for his family's health and well-being, we will have no further comment on this matter, end quote. Predators GM David Poile was on with Darren and Donick earlier today right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and here is what David Poile said on what he expects out of Austin Watson when he returns to the lineup.
I think that he'll go, you know, in a fourth-line position where he's played most of his time here with the Predators. I think we'll use him on the penalty killing, and certainly he'll be a physical force that I don't say we've been missing, but I just think he's an upgrade on what we currently have. So it's more depth. I think Waddy's in really good shape. He's been chomping at the bit to play. I don't think that's going to be a factor in terms of his play. I think he's just ready to go and put this whole thing behind him.
That was Predators GM David Poile earlier today on Darren and Donick. That was said before these statements were released this afternoon. We also hope David Poile gets better because, as he stated at the beginning of that interview, he's dealing with a sore throat today, and you could tell that he doesn't sound like normal David Poile. So get better, GMDP. What do you expect out of Austin Watson, Gover, on the ice? I mean, Poile said right there that he expects, you know, the same old Austin Watson that we've grown to expect over the last couple of years. He will assume a role on the fourth line. What do you expect out of Austin Watson on the ice?
I think I expect fresh legs. I expect an eager attitude, and I expect him to come back and be the penalty kill specialist that he has grown to be.
They have missed him on the penalty kill this season.
For sure they have. And last year, let's not forget, he scored 14 goals, easily a career high. Actually, almost tripled his previous career high. So 14 goals, 19 points. But I think obviously more than that with Austin Watson, of course, it's more about the penalty kill and his ability to shut down the opponent and really make it difficult on the opponent for those. We're talking about the Preds power play earlier, right? About how a lot of the shots come from the point and all that. Well, Watson's a master at keeping them,
right?
Keeping those shots coming from the perimeter, keep making them, you know, poor shots, not a good angles they like to take, all that.
He became a staple to this roster in the 2017 postseason.
Yes.
When he was tenacious on the penalty kill defensively, he was fantastic in the 2017 postseason, and then that just carried over into last regular season and even into the playoffs. So he's a staple to this lineup. So who comes out? Who comes out of the lineup in Austin Watson's return?
Okay, I'm about to make a tough choice. Ready?
Okay.
Mika Salamaki.
Why?
He is one of, I'd say, two, and now I'd probably say with Bonino's play over the last few weeks, I'd say he's the only Predators player that has been just about invisible to me, where every time I watch a game, I'm in the third period before I even realize he's in the lineup, and that's not good. Right now, Rocco Grimaldi has not produced, short of the goal.
Hey, scored a goal last night.
He was getting there, short of the short of the go-ahead goal. Last night, Grimaldi hasn't really produced that either, but you like his style of play, right? You like that he's tenacious. You like that he's kind of a, as David Poile called him on the show earlier, called him a mini Victor Arvidsson, which I thought was really funny. But he is a poor man's Victor Arvidsson, though. He's pint-sized. He's relentless on the puck. He does all kinds of things right. He's just not producing at the NHL level, and that's okay. You're not necessarily asking him to do that. But we've seen the creativity now. We've seen that he can score if necessary, if he gets the opportunity. But back to the point of Watson, though, I like Grimaldi staying in the lineup because of what he brings. Salamaki, to me, is just largely invisible this season, and I feel bad for him. But it's just because he's been a permanent scratch before. That's why I say that.
Well, the important thing to remember here is that with Victor Arvidsson and Dan Hamhuis on injured reserve, they don't need to send anybody down to Milwaukee to make room for Austin Watson. But at some point, Dan Hamhuis will return from IR. At some point, Victor Arvidsson will return from IR, which means they have some tough decisions with those depth forwards. And I said this with Adam Vingan of The Athletic the other night when he was in studio on this very show, is that I'm starting to lose faith that Freddie Gaudreau is going to be anything more than what he is now. And he has played in 29 games since the Stanley Cup final, 29 regular season games in Nashville, and he just hasn't done much at all. Like, and I think it was unfair to him that that's the bar that he set for himself.
Good for him, though.
I know, right?
It's a good problem to have.
Scoring 3 goals in the Stanley Cup final. Last year, a lot of people were clamoring for more Freddie Gaudreau, and he played in 20 games. He didn't offer much. This year, in 9 games, he hasn't offered much. And he's on the two-way contract this year. He's on a one-way next season. I kind of think it's going down the road, if you ask me, that Freddie Gaudreau could be going down to Milwaukee at some point when these healthy bodies start returning.
If I had tried who will, I would have said Gaudreau.
Okay.
But in my opinion, who should? Mika Salamaki.
Okay.
That's my concise answer.
So you're thinking Rocco Grimaldi and Zach Rinaldo have played well enough in the first quarter of the season.
I never thought I'd say that, but yes.
In the first quarter of the season to at least prolong their stay in Nashville.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they could go a week and then just fall off the face of the earth and then they make a change. But I think as of right now, I think the coaching staff likes both of them as well.
Absolutely. The big hot topic with this Preds team going into the season, early in the season, and even today, is the goaltending situation with Pekka and Juuse Saros. How do we feel those two goaltenders have played through 18 games this season? We will break it all down. Coming up next, he's Jeremy K. Gover. I'm Ryan Porth, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, and streaming on the Game Nashville app.
This is Preds Insiders.
Welcome back into the show, brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. Visit KellyERice.com for all your dental needs. Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover. The K is for knowledge.
That it is.
On this program. Gover, the big hot button issue with the Nashville Predators going into the season, and it has been the water cooler talk all season long so far for the Preds, is Pekka Rinne and Juuse Saros. And through 18 games, they have basically played the same amount of time. Now, Juuse Saros has played one more game than Pekka Rinne because Pekka Rinne left that game in Calgary in October early due to injury. But essentially, they have both played about 9 games. Little over 9 games for Juuse Saros.
They both started 9.
Correct. And Juuse Saros has played 10. And the numbers between the two are pretty drastic when you look at the peripherals. Now, the records are about the same. Pekka Rinne is 6-1-1. Juuse Saros is 7-3-0. But when you look at goals against average and save percentage, the main peripherals for goaltenders in the National Hockey League, Pekka Rinne has been lights out. 1.47 goals against average.
Which is ridiculous for those who don't know, by the way. That's insane.
9.51 save percentage.
Which is equally insane.
I was about to say that. And then you look at Juuse Saros, he's not doing as hot. 2.94 goals against average and a 9.03 save percentage. So I ask you, Gover, how do you feel like these two have played through 18 games? Let's start with Pekka Rinne.
Oh, so individually how they've played.
Okay. Let's look at individually.
Okay, I think Pekka Rinne is duplicating his Vezina Trophy year. I'm not going to go as far as he's going to win it. There's still a lot of season left, right? And we have not seen, we talk about ebbs and flows all the time, right, Porth? Like it's going to, hey, he's going to do really well, and then the power play is going to do really well, and then it's going to slump for a few weeks. And it's going to do He hasn't slumped yet. Now, a lot of that may be because he missed, was a week and a half, 2 weeks, I think, with the injury. Mm-hmm. And Saros came in and they played well and won games and everything was fine. But to see over a nine-game stretch, to be 6-1-1 with a 9.51 and that 1.47 you talked about, that's ridiculous. And we've heard a lot and we've kind of surmised that the more rest he gets, the better he is. So if they can give Saros more starts, Rinne should be able to turn in even better productivity. And guess what? We're seeing that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, I know there's an injury involved in the middle, but they start the first two games of the year. They split. And they just split this last back-to-back as well. So it's not like, you know, Saros is just, oh, he only played during the break. No, he's played a fair share. We've done 9 games each starting. Mm-hmm.
Pekka-Rinne has been insane since he got back from his injury. I mean, he's given up 3 goals in 4 games. And, you know, I didn't think he would be better than he was last year, but he is.
Oh, I don't think anybody said he was going to be better than last.
Everyone thought he would regress.
That was the ceiling.
Correct.
That was his peak form, and he wouldn't do any better than that. And yet, here we are in mid-November looking at an even better season so far.
I just did math on the fly. Pekka-Rinne has a .976 save percentage in the last 4 games since he got back from that brief stint on injured reserve. He has been fantastic. He has been a brick wall between the pipes, and like if this continues, he's got to be in the Vezina conversation again, right?
Oh, if this continues, this was not only a sub-2 goals against, but a sub-1.5.
He's going to win it again.
He's going to give it to him. They're not going to wait for the award ceremony.
I was reading something earlier today on the hockey news saying that John Gibson should be the early favorite for
the
Vezina.
He's up. He's the only reason the Ducks are even competitive.
Yeah. I mean, that team is oof.
Oof is right adjective.
Woof.
Yeah.
Woo. As they said in Home Alone. Who was that in Home Alone?
I could not tell you.
Woof.
Buzz's girlfriend. Woof.
Yeah.
There you
Buck
go.
Rising behind the glass.
Home Alone expert.
Yeah.
Was that on your business card?
Movie
Buck?
Expert.
100%.
So, we both agree that Pekka-Rinne is out of this world right now.
Crazy good.
Vezina level once again. Early in the season.
Right. Still a lot of season to go.
I think his stats are going to come back to life.
You know, to ground level?
To ground level a little bit. Not to say that ground level is bad for him.
Right.
But it's not going to be
a little more realistic.
147 goals against and .951 save percentage all year. Those would be records. Now,
yeah, just a tad.
Am I speaking the obvious?
No. Well, you're educating the audience, Porth.
There you go. Good way to put it.
Yeah.
So, UC Saros. The Vegas game, he was awesome. And he, in relief of Pekka-Rinne at the start of that stint when Pekka was out for a week, week and a half, 2 weeks, whatever it was, UC Saros was awesome. There have been some moments where it's been a little hairy with UC Saros, where let me put it this way. When someone goes in on a breakaway on Pekka-Rinne, I feel like Pekka-Rinne is going to stop it. The moments like last night when Joe Thornton is breaking in on that quick tic-tac-toe to go up ahead 5-4, I didn't have much faith that UC Saros was going to stop that puck. And I know not all of this right now is on UC Saros, and UC Saros has played pretty well most of the time this season, but there have been times where you're thinking, ooh, boy, like he's not the same goaltender that we saw last season.
I don't know if I'd go that far. I mean, you're right. He's not like this spectacular highlight reel.
He hasn't gotten a lot of help, but he's also been
right, but
leaky.
That's just it, right? So, to me, he's played more games this early in the NHL season than ever.
That's fair.
We just talked about how he'd never started back-to-back games in the NHL level until Rinne was hurt, and he did like 5 in a row. So, to me, because he's the backup, because he makes what he makes, which I don't have that number in front of me right now, but I think it's $1.5 million, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And because Pekka-Rinne is still in the driver's seat, obviously, to me, it's cool, right? If your backup goaltender can hover around that 2.5, 2.6 goals against average, I think that's good. That's adequate. Now, nobody in Nashville wants to hear that because he's the future.
He can't have those numbers as a starter.
Sure, but if he's working up to it, I'm okay with that. And you're right. When he got into a rhythm, he was great at times. Well, actually, I'd say most of the time he was great.
Look,
there were a lot of saves he made that he should not have made that looked routine because of his positioning was so good. And I don't know how else to explain it without showing you video.
Right.
Not you, but I mean the audience.
Right. The one thing that I will caution people is that there were a lot of people when Pekka-Rinne went on IR and UC Saros started for that week that said, the torch has been passed.
Please.
It is UC Saros as the future. The future is now. Hold off a little bit. I mean, the kid is 23. He doesn't have a ton of NHL experience. He's been very good as a backup in these last couple years. But I'm not 100% sold that he can be as good as Pecorine has been in his career as starter when UC Saros eventually takes over.
Okay, well, the good news
is... I just need to see more from him.
The good news is 95% of the league's history has not been as good as Pecorine has been in his career. So that's the good news.
Okay.
But that it's an extreme, I'm just saying.
You know what I'm saying, though.
No, like, I know, totally. Like, I totally get it.
Very good starter level. Like, UC Saros right now would probably be above average or good starter level.
Sure, and I think above average starter level right now as your backup, I think that buys you time.
I would agree with that.
So, but the last thing I'll say about this is that we have to remember, too, Saros has not had consistent work since probably early last year when he was in Milwaukee for a few games. He's been basically sitting on the bench with some spot duty every now and then until Rene's injury.
Game every week? Once a week?
Maybe.
You know.
Yeah. And so for me.
3 games over 2 weeks?
Right. So, something like that. Yeah. So when I look at that, I go, okay, let's get him a rhythm going, mm-hmm. and then I can make a full judgment call. Right now, he's 23 years old. He won't be 24 until the playoffs,
wow,
by the way. So it's not like he turns 24 at Christmas. Like, it's the playoff time. And then on top of that, he hasn't played much consistently at all since, like, probably, I don't have it in front of me, I'm guessing early November of last season. Give him time.
Coming up next, why it's unrealistic for a player heavily involved in trade rumors to come to Nashville, but something else that's pretty cool is coming to Nashville. That's all coming up next. I'm Ryan Porth. He is Jeremy K. Gopher. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, Nashville. This is Sean Henry. You're listening to Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
What's up, Sean? It's Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming on the Game Nashville app. The other thing that will be streaming on the Game Nashville app tomorrow night, the Preds will be taking on the Arizona Coyotes. Pregame at 7, puck drop at 8. Yours truly will be on pregame and puck and postgame in place of Darren McFarland. So that will be a lot of fun. Preds, Coyotes, that will be the end of the road trip, the long road trip for the Preds before they return home Saturday night against the LA Kings. I think it's a stretch of like 8 of 9 at Bridgestone Arena. So they can win tomorrow night in Arizona and get another 2 points, and you have 8 of your next 9 at home at Bridgestone Arena. I think that would be putting the Preds in a pretty good place by about the holidays in terms of the standings.
When I get to Arizona tomorrow, it's the first question I'm going to ask somebody. Whatever player I get for the pregame show, I'm going to ask him right off the bat, how do you stay focused on the game at hand and not look forward to, hey, we got to get this little road trip over with, we're ready for it to be over, and oh, by the way, we've got a long homestand coming up, we'll win then. Just a little,
absolutely.
Just a little insight. What's going to happen tomorrow in Glendale?
If you've been paying attention at all across the National Hockey League, you know that very skilled Toronto Maple Leafs forward William Nylander, who has not played a game yet this season because he is still a restricted free agent, unsigned, is heavily involved in trade rumors because the Leafs can't figure it out with Nylander's camp. He is still unsigned. We have no idea whether or not Nylander will play this year. If he does, whether it's with Toronto or with Team X, but there are a whole lot of trade rumors. It's like a daily conversation in Toronto. Like, you listen to whatever it is up there, the Fan 590 or whatever it is in Toronto, they are talking about Nylander around the clock. And Pierre LeBrun of The Athletic came out with 9 possible suitors today at The Athletic. 9 possible suitors for William Nylander. They are as follows: Carolina, Los Angeles, Minnesota, Anaheim, Florida, St. Louis, Vegas, Arizona, Colorado. Those are, according to Pierre LeBrun, the 9 top suitors for William Nylander, the talented forward for Toronto, and there's no Nashville on that list. Now, in previous rumors, I've heard Chris Johnston of Sportsnet, you know, mention Nashville as a possible team. I think it was last month when he did that. And we have heard Nashville kind of, you know, mentioned, but not heavily. Carolina, I think, is the most heavily involved team in these rumors. But Gover, you have a take on why Nashville is not on this list and why they should be, right?
I do. They should be on the list because they can offer Toronto, not one of the four defensemen. We know that the top four defensemen are untouchable. Poyle said that over and over again. And I still stick to my guns on the, you don't sign Ryan Ellis to a new contract with the basically promise that Poyle's going to keep the core together and then go trade a piece. Okay, so I still stick to that. That being said, I think Nashville could provide a decent package to Toronto in exchange for Nylander. And here's why Nylander works on this team. He's 22 years old. He'll be 23 in the playoffs. So he's about 22 and a half. He's a consistent, and I mean that, consistent 61-point scorer. Each of the last two seasons, he's played 81 games and 82 games respectively. Both seasons, he came up with 61 points and 22. He's a two-time 20-goal scorer as well. You put that kind of player on a team with Forsberg, Fiala, in theory, Johansson, Smith, again in theory, Turris, Arvidsson, you're just loading up, right? So now all of a sudden that second power play unit is pretty dangerous as well. Not that it isn't, but just, you know, we talked right about the struggles earlier. So I think he's a perfect fit. My take on why the Preds are not interested is because of a line that I'm going to have you read because I don't have it in front of me, Ryan. Is in the Carolina piece, in Pierre LeBrun's article, he mentions the line of, and I'm paraphrasing here, you can correct me, something about how of the suitors, Carolina, you got it?
For starters, no team in the bidding might be as deep on defense as the Hurricanes.
So that right there indicates to me, because you know Pierre's done his homework. You know he's called all kinds of executives and talked to them anonymously and on the record and off the record. To me, that means Pierre thinks that Nashville is not interested.
Well, Toronto wants a defenseman.
Right.
If they're going to give up someone like Nylander, look, they have a ton of offensive firepower now with John Tavares there, with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and everybody else. They need a defenseman.
They do.
And I cannot foresee David Poyle giving up any of the four for William Nylander at all. And I don't think Dante Fabro is good enough in a trade package to bring William Nylander to Nashville.
It doesn't help him. It doesn't help Toronto now.
And I think they want help now because they can win now.
They can win now, which is exactly why they don't necessarily need the immediate satisfaction of that.
I think that's why they would want the immediate satisfaction, though. Because they are already one of the best teams points-wise in the National Hockey League.
You're saying for the same reason the Preds will try to load up with more secondary scoring, they want
a defenseman.
To anchor up. to load up on their defense as well. Okay, that makes sense.
So here's why I don't think Nashville is a great fit for William Nylander. Okay. A, you're going to have to pay him a lot of money.
Around seven, ballpark.
That's what he's little over $7 million.
For those who don't know, that's what he's holding out for. Apparently, he's holding out for $8 million a year.
You just said the other reason why he's holding out.
Yeah,
for money, right?
Yeah,
he's holding out for that money. What did Ryan Ellis just do in the summer? What did Pecorine just do back in October November with the contract extensions that they signed?
They took team friendly deals that also benefited them.
Bam, and this is a very tight knit group, where you have guys like Roman Josi, Ryan Johansson. This core has been together for a while. And why would you give up a ton of pieces and pay William Nylander, who, as you just stated, has never had a season with more than 61 points?
Okay. I'll let you finish.
He's 22.
Sorry. Right.
He's very talented. But you're giving up the farm. You already don't have a ton of assets, great assets, already in the cupboard, right?
That's very fair.
So you don't have a lot of great assets in the cupboard. You would be giving all of them to Toronto. You would be giving William Nylander more money than you're paying just about any other player on the roster. And Nylander hasn't really done all that much in the National Hockey League. Now, he's 22 years old, to your point, only played two seasons. He's a great player. If they found a way to trade for him, not give up any of the core, and you're not paying him top dollar, I guess I'd be open to it, but I don't know if you shake the apple cart for that. I just don't know. I'm thinking out loud with this, but if you're going to trade for a player, why would you be trading for a player that has been holding out for money and trying to put him in a core that is so team first?
Fair. I would just counter that by saying he's 22 years old, and it's the culture he's been in is the Toronto culture. Okay, so which is now winning and all that, but it's also been the get your money, right? Put yourself first, all that stuff. So for me, I just think that if he could do 7.75, something that's close to his 8, that's Ryan Johansson money. Now, I'm not discounting that at all. I'm just saying, though, that if you could bring in a guy like that, winning solves everything. And if you can give him $7.75 million for, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, whatever it may be, and you flip maybe another forward, let's say you flip Smith or Fiala, I'm just making that up on the fly. If you flip one of those guys, now you've taken up some cap space that you put now towards Nylander, and now your core is better for a long time.
I'm not going to dispute that, but I wouldn't give up what it's going to take to get Nylander and pay him. And, I mean, at that point, like, you don't have much left cap space-wise or assets in the cupboard.
I agree with both those things. I just think Nylander is a dynamic talent enough to flirt with that idea at least.
He's certainly a dynamic talent. Hey, before we get out of here, shout out to the city of Nashville and the Nashville Predators for bringing the National Women's Hockey League All-Star Weekend to Smashville. On Sunday, February 10th, there's going to be a doubleheader at Bridgestone Arena. The Preds will play the Blues early that afternoon, a nationally televised game on NBC. That game will be followed by the NWHL All-Star Game at Bridgestone Arena. Cool event. Glad to see the Preds jump on board.
I'm super excited about this. Also, the day before, Saturday, there's going to be a skills competition. Their skills challenge will be at Ford Ice Center, strictly limited to 500 tickets. So 500 people will get in. The tickets will go on sale, I think, at the end of November. And you can go see that. It's going to be just awesome to be a part of that, okay? The NWHL is a budding league, and it's just super exciting to see where the women's hockey is going. And I will remind everybody who loves hockey just in general, to their core, that Minnesota hosted the All-Star game and directly led to an expansion team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that's going to happen here. I'm just saying that they do like to get out of their traditional markets and come, go to neutral sites for their All-Star weekends, and Nashville's turn.
That would be cool to see Nashville get an NWHL
awesome
team
so
right
great
here in Nashville. And at 8 o'clock, Penalty Box Radio will be joined by the commissioner of the NWHL, Danny Rylan.
That's
so
right.
That should be awesome at 8 o'clock. Coming up next, though, Gover, you are going to stay here in the studio, and you're going to be with Paul McCann on Slapshot Radio. That's all coming up next. I'm Ryan Porth. You've been listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app.